reflecting on the way it is now, is awakened awareness, being the knowing, being that which is awake, rather than being somebody who is trying to get something or change something. You can see personality is always identity with becoming, trying to become something or change something, get rid of something. There's always this feeling of incompleteness as a person, something that you have to do, you have to achieve, or you've got to purify yourself or get rid of your bad thoughts. So like identity clinging to personality, to sakya-ditti, is always suffering because it's hopeless. That's why we suffer so much despair in our lives, because when we don't understand, we don't know Dhamma, then all our most sincere attempts at trying to achieve and become and purify and so forth will end up always in feeling of failure or unsatisfactoriness, disappointment. But being the knowing isn't becoming anything, is it? You're not becoming somebody who is Buddha or is knowing anything. It's learning to awaken, just pay attention. Parent here and now, Santitiko, Akaliko, Ehipasto, Opanayiko, Bajatang, Vaitidapo, Inue, definitely pointing to a parent here and now, timeless. Ehipasiko in English translation, encouraging investigation, is a bit flat, actually. It, as a translation, has an immediacy of come and see. You know, it's almost a command or an invitation. Wake up, look, it's now, rather than encouraging investigations. Sounds to be a bit flat. And then Opanayika Dhamma, leading, in England we call it leading onwards, and here you're saying leading inwards. But wherever it's leading, they change the translations regularly. I can't keep up with them myself. But. But both translations work. The point is that awakening is being mindful, being present, or pure presence. Bajatang vaitidapo inui, to be experienced, be known individually by the wise, is something that somebody else, an enlightened master or a wise sage, can't give you. It's not, you can't ask external sources to enlighten you or to wake you up. You know, it's up to you. It's bajatang. You know, maybe I could go around and say, wake up, and kind of nag you a bit, and every time you look like you're lost in your realm of self-stillness, say, wake up, but then you tend to think, I depend on Ajahn Sumedho to wake me up. And that's not it. It's not something, you just kind of, maybe I can kind of startle you. But that's not being awake, is it? It's when you're really awake, when you're relaxed and confident in this pure presence of pure awareness, pure consciousness. So this immediacy, this refuge in Buddha, the knower, the pure presence, awareness, wisdom, then it knows the Dhamma. It's an immediate knowing. It's not, I'm going to practice now from my self-view in order to get rid of it. You know, so I'm trying to kind of destroy myself. So starting from ignorance, you end up with suffering. They're like in the dependent origination, paticca samuppada, investigating that. Ignorance is always the cause of dukkha. The vicca is always, you start with a vicca as your basis for meditation, then you end up with dukkha as a result. And so notice that the Buddha actually is saying, wake up and start with vicca, start with the awakened awareness rather than from avicca, or not knowing, or just the perfunctory habits and identities that we sometimes never question, such as I am this person who's unenlightened and I need to practice meditation in order to become enlightened. How many of you are meditating with that as your kind of modus operandi, the kind of foundation for your practice? You really believe it, you know, I'm really totally convinced I am a person who is ignorant, unenlightened, and I'm here at Spirit Rock in order to practice and be instructed and have time to develop and get somewhere so I can become enlightened in the future. So notice that's abhijja. I am a person, a personality, who has to do something in order to become something and get something that I don't have yet. By getting rid of my defilements, my bad habits, and all. And this is what seems to be the truth in terms of the worldly position. But that's not the way it is in terms of the Dhamma. Notice that when we started this retreat, the refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, is the kind of clue. If you really understand or really value and treasure that refuge of awareness, direct knowing, not a kind of knowing about the Dhamma. I mean, people read the scriptures and scholars, academics, that know all about the Dhamma. And they've read the Theravada, Mahayana scriptures, commentaries. They can read Pali, Sanskrit, Tibetan, Chinese. They know the whole history of Buddhism and all the different, how it kind of started and how it developed and branched out and all like this. They know all about, but they don't know the Dhamma. That's possible, isn't it? So in knowing the Dhamma doesn't mean you have to know all about Buddhism. It's trusting in the awareness of this Santitiko Dhamma, apparent here and now. So what is apparent here and now? Well, tell me, Ajahn Sumedho. I'm so ignorant I can't figure it out. So you, and we're back in the with the Sakyaditi again, isn't it? In the sense of I'm this, you know, I'm just a new meditator. This is my first retreat. You know, I don't know anything. And we can, you know, we can totally be committed to the sense of to this perception, or the awakening to that perception. I'm not even saying that there's something wrong with the perception. It's just, but it's noting that it is a perception. It's not a judgment against the quality of the perception, but the awakenness is the recognition of I am this unenlightened person as a perception. And so that's, you know, whether you realize it or not, that is an awakened recognition of Dhamma, the way it is. Now, in this paradigm of consciousness, Buddha knows the Dhamma. So, notice the Dhamma are the knowing the objects, isn't it? The Dhammas. The word Dhamma can be used in terms of the Dhamma or the Dhammas. So, and seeing the conditions as Dhammas, so that this condition, I am unenlightened, this is my first retreat and I don't know anything about Buddhism, seeing this as a Dhamma rather than as through the personality view of really believing that I am somebody who has to study Buddhism in order to become enlightened in the future, which is not saying it's wrong or anything wrong with that, but it is the attachment to that view, the identity with it, that leads to the suffering. So this is why it is an imminent act of trust in this knowing, in this pure presence. So you can recognize this for what it is. So in this present moment now, there's a sound of silence. A kind of ostinato background of vibratory, kind of scintillating, high pitch. Continuous, it has continuity, it goes on and on and on. And yet it is background. It's not like it's not like a sound in terms of a sound that destroys other sounds. Like if you, noise, isn't it? If you have a loud sound, it kind of totally kind of destroys any other possibilities. All you hear is this loud blast, and so one sound destroys another. But if you notice, the sound of silence enhances sound itself. It supports, it brings perspective. It's not something that divides or blots out or destroys anything. As you develop a recognition of it, you can notice it at all times, in the midst of noisy situations, or in even when listening to music, learning to develop an attention to it, even in when there's the lawnmower or the chainsaw or the most kind of loud mechanical sound, or behind the music. So as you begin to recognize this and cultivate it, then it gives you, it's something you can always refer to, even in the midst of the most noisy, acrimonious situations. If you remember, you can tune into that, and it stops you from just being caught in negativity, reactivity, and so forth, that we tend to, if we forget and get lost in our personality views again. I guess complaining, the traffic jam, noisy city, those difficult people, those terrible sound, noise pollution everywhere, complain, grumble, grumble. Then here and now, the body, this physical body, bringing attention to the experience of sitting and inspecting this body. What is it like? You need to just notice it. Feeling, it's tension, it's tightness, it's whether it's relaxed or tense or painful or whatever it is. It all belongs. We're noticing it in terms of just it's like this, rather than it shouldn't be like this. It's not a critical examination or anything. It's just paying attention to the way it is. It's not a matter of whether we like it or not, but it is this way. So it's always good to pay attention to the body in this way, and in terms of this retreat, if you get, get confused, what should I do next, and kind of feeling. You can always return to the body, the bodily sensation, as a kind of rule of thumb. It's something always worth doing. Helpful to be with the body, to be with its sensations, with its tension even, with its pain, or investigate neutral feeling. Begin to awaken to just the sensations that are neither pleasurable nor painful, such as the clothes touching your skin, the sleeve around your neck, or one hand resting on the other, or the upper lip touching the lower lip, or the tongue touching the palate, or the teeth. These are usually neutral sensations that we never notice because they're not extreme enough. They're neither pleasurable enough nor painful enough to draw our attention. So we pay attention in this way of awareness. It's like this. When we are conscious of neutral or neither pleasurable nor painful Vedana, it's quite calming, because it doesn't take us to a high or a low. If you notice, if you're staying with what is rather neutral, it's doesn't go to one extreme or the other, then you do have a sense of balance, of calm, of serenity. It's because neutrality is like that, where extremity gets you high or low, elated or depressed. If you pay attention to bodily sensations, kind of sweeping through the body, noticing its subtle sensations, neutral sensations, then the body is developing pity, or what they translated as rapture, which tends to sound like some kind of high, but it's not. It's a sense of physical well-being of the body relaxed. And then the body is a very pleasant condition to be with. If it's relaxed and accepted and not kind of ignored or you're not willing it, making it, forcing it to be something, trying to bend it to your will. As you open to it and understand it, then the body itself can be quite helpful in reflecting on the way things are. It's supportive. Helping towards enlightenment rather than being a big problem or a hindrance to it. Then the breath, if we're aware of the body, then the breath also, body breathes. And as you focus on the breathing, the anapanasati, refinement, sense of mental happiness, tranquility, peacefulness increases. And this is what I generally use as my kind of foundation, the gamatana, the sound of silence, the body posture, sensations, and the breath. Also, in the foundation of mindfulness is the jitanupassana, saripatthana, or noting the kind of mental or emotional quality that you're experiencing. So with this knowing and with this awareness, you're aware of, say, the mood that you're in, the kind of mental quality, whether you're feeling as the mood of, whether you feel sad, dull, sleepy, angry, resentful, lustful, tranquil, distracted, confused, despairing, depressed, and on like this, from subtle states to very coarse ones. But there's this. This is a foundation for mindfulness, known as awareness of this rather than identity with it. The relationship to mood and to mental conditions is now one of the Buddha knowing the Dhamma rather than a person that's in a state that has a particular mood or in a particular caught into a state of mind that can be quite painful if you identify with it. what is it that knows you're feeling despair or lonely or depressed? And that it's because this feeling, this mood is an aramana. It's a dhamma. It's an object that you can know. It's like this. Well, when you revert back to your sakyaditti position, then you're totally identified with it. I am feeling like this, and I feel lonely and depressed, and I don't want to feel this way. Whose fault is it that I'm like this? Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. And it's somebody's fault. It's a sakyaditti, isn't it? So this is all the kind of imbroglio of self, the kind of the mess of ignorance and attachment, the web, the complicated web that we weave out of ignorance, in which we get stuck. But immediately awakening to it, even confusion, for example, not knowing what to do, feeling confused or dull, feeling dull or bored or sleepy. We know that this is a mental state, isn't it? This is an aramana. So being the knowing rather than the attachment and identity with the condition itself means that we're transcending it. This pure state of knowing things as they are transcends the condition. It embraces, it is not rejecting or denying or trying to get rid of it. It's embracing it. So your relationship is towards sleepiness or dullness or confusion is one of knowing it. Non-judgment, acceptance, allowing these conditions to be what they are, because their very nature is to change anyway, so it's not me trying to make them go away. It's the willingness to allow them to be what they are, and allowing them to change according to their nature rather than toward my desires. And many times people have asked about when I went to stay with Lumpur Chakras, how he could teach me anything because of the language. Well, I couldn't speak Thai at the time and he couldn't speak English. So then we think, well, how could you learn from somebody who you can't, you have no common language? The book. Thai and Western people ask me, how did he teach you? And of course, one thing that Ajahn Chah had a great gift of pointing, you know, getting you to look, you know, awakening you. Like even though, which isn't a matter of, you know, of language at all, is it? No, not a matter of speaking the same language in terms of speaking Thai or English, but it's the way he could get me to pay attention. And so a lot of what I would do during the first year was pay attention to the moods and the feelings that I was having, because it was very confusing for me, because I on one level I couldn't understand very well. Of the language, different culture, different climate, everything was different for me. It wasn't, you know, and the feeling of feeling confused, or you, if you've ever had to live in a place where you can't speak to anybody because of language, you get quite paranoid. But a lot of paranoia too, I keep thinking, you know, kind of suspecting that, you know, there's something going on. They're all talking about something. I don't know what they're talking about. And then sometimes they're talking, they're looking at me. And I think, oh God, what are they going to do? And they get paranoid. And yet, I could look at this fear or this paranoia, this suspicion. Because Lung Po Cha would kind of direct my attention to this. Or my conceit and arrogance, like, you know, whether you realize it or not, being an American, oftentimes you assume all kinds of superiority, that you think you're quite, you're not arrogant or think you're better than somebody else, but then it's oftentimes reflected in situations where you've got, you know, you. In America, we do it this way, or we kind of think we know better how to do things sometimes than others, and or that the Americans have it all sussed out. These people, you know, don't quite get it, or kind of arrogant attitudes like this could be reflected in consciousness. So this Dittanu Pasana Saribhutanu, Lung Po Cha used this a lot, he's stubborn. So now I became aware of, I could be incredibly stubborn rebellious, conforming, the total conformity that was expected in this monastery to live under these rules, this Vinaya, and the Thai tradition, the Thai custom. And so they were, the way they're constantly at me all the time, saying, you know, you have to walk, you walk in a too aggressive style, you know. You have to change the way you walk, the way you present yourself. Because I was big and taller than all the rest. I tried to make myself smaller. And I looked more arrogant. You got jutting chin and a big nose, like a hawk or a... rebellious feeling of resistance to conformity and wanting to rebel against the system, kind of childish emotion would come up. So if you want me to do it, I'm not going to do it. Like, you know, when I was a little boy and my mother would want me to do something, I'm not going to do it. Why? Because you want me to do it. I don't know. So this also is a way of resolving these particular kind of tendencies, like immature emotions and attitudes that oftentimes are quite embarrassing for us, especially when you're getting older and you're still emotionally childish, and you know, you can feel, you know, kind of like your temper tantrums and emotional states that emotional habits that have not been resolved yet, maybe been suppressed. As you get older, you learn how to act more maturely, to to present yourself as a much more mature kind of person, but inside that facade is still oftentimes a frightened child or a spoiled child. So this way of noticing the way it is allows these conditions to become conscious. When you allow something to be fully conscious, then you can let it go. It's not like repressing is where you're kind of denying or resisting, trying to get rid of something. But mindfulness allows you to resolve emotional habits through allowing them to be what they are, allowing them to be conscious, accepted in consciousness, and then you can let them go. They go away, liberated. So actually, mindfulness is the way to resolve, say, personal habits, immature emotional habits or feelings, fears and desires, which is neither indulging or repressing, but knowing them in terms of Dhamma, the Buddha knowing, seeing the Dhamma. So that's why, this encouragement during this retreat to, when I say trust yourself, I'm not saying trust your Sakyaditi views. I don't trust any of mine. Even at this point, my Sakyaditi, I wouldn't trust for anything. I've examined it enough, and attached to it enough to know that how miserable it will make me. But I do trust in awareness, in this attention to the present. And it's in this trusting that you can allow even the most hidden fears or terrors or whatever into consciousness, because your relationship to it now is one of through wisdom rather than through personal habits and identification. So in this sense of refuge, that is a real refuge, a safe place to be, is being mindful. And it implies not just in a safe place like Spirit Rock. Doesn't mean mindfulness is what you can develop here because it's quite a safe place to be. But it means that wherever you are, even in the midst of a battlefield or hanging on a cliff, hanging off a cliff, be mindful. And when you fall off the cliff, be mindful while you're falling. But sometimes it's easier to be mindful in dangerous situations, isn't it? Because if you notice when your life is in danger, you're automatically mindful. It just comes. Where in comfortable societies like we have here, we can be totally heedless because there's not much danger around, isn't it? Live in safe places, nice houses, apartments, and so forth. We live in comfort. No kind of immediate life-threatening situation, so we can be totally neurotic. But when when a tiger's chasing you, you forget all about that, and something in you is self-preservation. The mindfulness is automatic. So the challenge, say, of a meditation retreat is the fact that it is, you know, we're not living, you know, on the edge of a cliff or in a jungle with wild animals that could pounce on us at any moment. It's quite, you know, safe environment, civilized, everybody's taken the 8 precepts. For this planet, on this planet Earth at this time, this is probably as safe as you can expect life to be. But then look at the fears that can come up, you know, the anxiety, the worry, the stuff that we produce, even in the midst of a very safe and pleasant situation. And so then our relating to it now isn't, you know, critical of ourselves for having these neurotic tendencies, but a willingness to notice them non-judgmentally. Like fear and anxiety, worry, even stupidity, confusion, feeling just totally confused or totally doubt-ridden and insecure, is now our relationship to it is one of knowing it's like this, rather than of judging it, which is that I shouldn't feel like this. How can I get rid of this insecurity or this confusion? I don't like it, I don't want it. And then we struggle with it. But if you stop struggling and trust in awareness of it, see what happens. So this is for you to examine, to find out for yourself. So encouraging you in this for today, opportunity, whole day in the silence, you can experiment with this.
The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, Burhan Bhagavantang Abhivademi, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Suvakato Bhagavata Namo, the teaching so completely explained by him. Namah Namasami, I bow to the Namah. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho, the Blessed One's disciples who have practiced well. Sangham Namami, I bow to the Sangha.